Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about Masterminds, The Girl on the Train, and The Accountant. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. We're handheld today.
Somebody's holding our hands.
Yeah.
Like, we're not holding hands.
Well, we're recording from Yazdi's house, and I would say I forgot to bring the microphone stands, but I didn't.
No, we couldn't find them.
Can't find the darn things. We're still in boxes. Like, how long has it been since we moved now?
5 weeks.
And there are still, like, floor-to-ceiling boxes in many areas of the house. Although, it's because you've been travelling, right?
Yeah.
Although I like holding the mic in the hand.
I like it too.
Feel more...
in control.
Like a reporter.
Yeah, like a fake retired reporter. Yes.
Yeah, because I feel like doing this. Hey, Yazdi, what are you wearing?
A blue shirt.
Rashmi, that makes for terrible radio. No one
can see what you're doing. But you know what I'm saying? Yes, it gives you that feeling of you're in control and you can put the mic wherever you feel like you want to put that.
Now I have to do the closed caption version. Because what Rashmi did was she took her microphone away from her and pointed it at Yazdi, as a reporter might do. In fact, I should Instagram this.
Like this, watch. Yazdi, what are you wearing?
A blue shirt.
Oh, you didn't take the picture.
I took the picture.
Oh, but it's just us holding our mics.
Oh, this is a production nightmare. Listen to us, such amateurs. All right. So, we have three movies to do today. So, we're going to skip our standard kind of I can't find anything on Netflix picks, just because we got a lot to get through. And... there are three movies, Masterminds, Girl on a Train, and The Accountant. All three very different movies.
Yes.
So, where would you like to start? Should we start with...
The Girl on the Train.
Okay.
Okay, so The Girl on the Train is about a lady called Rachel who's been devastated by her recent divorce and spends her daily commute fantasizing about the seemingly perfect couple who live in a house that her train passes every day. Until one morning, she sees something shocking happen there and becomes entangled in the mystery that unfolds. This is based on Paula Hawkins' best-selling novel. It's directed by Tate Taylor, and the screenplay is written by Erin Cressida Wilson. And this stars Emily Blunt, Rebecca Ferguson, Hayley Bennett, Justin Theroux, Allison Janney, Lisa Kudrow, and Luke Evans, amongst some others. So I know we all read the book, right? We've all read the book for this one.
Yes.
Yazdi, why don't you start us off?
So I think, you know, it sounds like such a cliche, but you know, a movie can never really match up to the book. And I think this is a classic example of that. But what's really unfortunate for me is that this movie kind of comes at the heels of last year's Gone Girl. And every step of the movie, I did not have this feeling when I was reading the book, curiously enough. But every step of watching the movie, I was like, oh, this is so trying or wanting to be Gone Girl. And it doesn't quite get there. It's trying very hard and doesn't quite get there. So that kind of felt like an unfortunate thing for it to happen. But be that as it may, if you don't know anything about the book, if you don't know anything about this story, I think it holds up reasonably well. It's one of these preposterous crime stories about people doing horrible things, and you have a famously unreliable narrator, you know, which always make for a funny story, for a fun storytelling device. So overall, I like the movie, and I think, I know I'm going to be controversial in saying this, but I don't think it's stretching too much to think that Emily Blunt, maybe for consideration for best actor, she's that good in this movie. I really liked her.
Mm. Joe.
So what was interesting with this movie is that I finished reading the book literally as I was pulling up to the movie theater. I bought the book on tape and thought that because the book had had so much praise, I would try and, you know, read it before seeing the movie. So, you know, I kind of have had all of the plot revelations literally just kind of laid out in front of me in the hour prior to seeing the movie. And, you know, Yazdi, it's not a cliche. I mean, I think it always is very difficult for a book to make it onto the silver screen intact, especially when, like in this book, so much of what is what transpires in terms of plot and the way the plot plays itself out occurs in terms of somebody trying to remember a certain day, a certain fact, and it all is all in her head, and she's, you know, somewhat neurotic. She has issues with alcohol and self-esteem, mm-hmm. and so the confusion that, you know, the plot reveal works very well on the written page, but not so much on the screen. The level of difficulty was almost too high for this because of the way that the book is constructed. And so what we end up here is a reasonably effective thriller. I think had I not known the, you know, the plot's twists and turns, I think it would have been somewhat more exciting. But, you know, there are many films where I've seen, where I've read the book before and made the film no less effective. So, you know, it's overall, it's kind of disappointing only because I think it couldn't stand up to the book.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp. So for me, this is a big fat meh. I was so excited to watch this movie because I literally read the book in probably less than 4 days. And I couldn't wait to see how it would transform from paper to screen. And I think the disappointment for me came because the movie as it really can't go, didn't go deep enough. But more importantly, I agree with you, Yazdi. I think Blunt gave an amazing performance, and we can talk about that in a while. But everybody else's performances were like cardboard. So for me, mm-hmm. it then came across like a made-for-TV movie.
Yes.
It could have been like a Lifetime Channel movie that we were watching. It just didn't have the pizzazz or the richness of those characters.
I think that's fair, yeah. The made-for-TV sentiment is a good one, because that is ultimately how I felt as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues with the movie, I thought, was that it kind of gives away the reveal a little too quickly. I think after the reveal in the movie, it goes on for a good another 10, 15 minutes. And I read the book about 5-6 months ago, and I seem to remember that it came at the very end.
Very end, yeah.
Very end. And I think the book is very fascinatingly written, because it's told by three different female characters who you figure out over a period of time that each is kind of broken in their own way, and each may not be exactly saying the truth, which again, you know, is a parallel with, you know, the two narrators in Gone Girl. But, and they use the same device in the movie as well, but it doesn't really work as well. And I think part of it is, again, inherent to the medium, because there's a lot of moving back and forth in time as well. And When I was reading, I was kind of consciously keeping track of that. But mm-hmm. in the movie, it all seems like it all occurred at the same time. So even though it says, you know, 6 months later, 6 months before, 2 weeks later, whatever. So I think there's a lot to kind of assimilate and throw at you, and then not enough payback for everything you've invested in.
Yeah, so, no, that's a fair point. And you know, just to, you know, maybe revisit the point I made earlier about it being in the character's head so much, which is, it makes it very hard. It's three, you're right, it's three characters' head. And I think particularly with the fact that the Emily Blunt character is so broken, right? I mean, the way that the book deals with that is it over-dramatizes certain things that she does. Like she sends a text message and it becomes this big to-do, this big thing that she can't get over. And I think the screenplay tries to capture some of that, but it ends up feeling somewhat melodramatic. I mean, you know, clearly there are dramatic events in here. You know, the story revolves around, you know, disappearance and a murder. But the way that it tells that story, I think, veers into that kind of melodrama type situation where it's like, come on, get over yourself type, you know. So again, I think it was a deliberate decision by the filmmakers to play it that way, but it comes across as, like you say, Rashmi, made for TV.
It's disposable, right? Yeah, when this isn't little, really a disposable kind of, you know, story.
It's almost very soapy.
Absolutely. So for me, I think the issue is the gimmick in this book is that it's actually three people coming to a similar conclusion, right? It's actually things that are going on in three completely different lives that kind of unravel to a similar conclusion in some way. And the tension in the book, and again, I don't want to harp on too much about book versus screenplay, because I want to try and give our listeners a sense of, is this a movie that can stand on its own? Right. And that's where I'm coming to, I think, which is, I don't know if as a movie it's enough of a satiable meal, right? I don't know whether it's satisfying enough without all of the information that we know as the readers going into the movie. And I think the joy of the book, which is why I read it so incredibly fast, was there's so much tension from chapter to chapter, from time point to time point. And each thing is a red herring, and then you kind of get to that red herring, you're like, oh, they did it, or that person did it, or that person did it. Doesn't really leave anyone alone, right? Everyone is a suspect. And then eventually there's a resolution. And that tension just didn't play out in this movie. I didn't feel scared for any of these characters. I didn't kind of care. They weren't fully formed enough for us to care about them.
That's another good point. I mean, the book points the finger at several characters along the way, and this movie didn't do that effectively. I mean, there is a particular character who, in the book, I was convinced for, you know, a good third of the narrative,
Dr. Kamal,
that he was involved, but you know, the movie doesn't really take you there.
Yeah, see, I mine was always going to be another character, but yeah, I won't say which other ones.
I really think this is directed by the person who made The Help, who directed the movie The Help, which, you know, we all love so much.
Yeah.
So I think he wanted to make another very good adaptation of a very popular novel, but I think he kind of, he got the acting right, at least from the lead character.
Yes.
But the rest of the stuff, you know, it's a very dense, very detailed book, and it's the mental terrain of these three female characters. And it, you know, there is a lot of voiceover in the movie, but even then it's hard to kind of do that and have, you know, and to do justice to all three. So the book actually comes out to be only about Emily Blunt. Sorry, the movie turns out to be only Emily Blunt, and we don't get into the heads of the other two characters.
The others are not well realized at all.
Yeah, they're not well realized, and I think maybe that's where it comes from. But, you know, about Emily Blunt, we all know she's a great actor, and we always like her and everything she does. But
except on Saturday Night Live, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, that's a whole other podcast.
But it's very difficult to play drunk, I think.
Yes.
You know, without coming off as, you know,
overacting
or cliche, or, you know, just doing a caricature. But there is, at no point in the movie, there is any doubt whether she's fully sober or if she's just a little bit drunk or if she's so drunk she's completely out of it. And she plays all these different gradations of, you know, somebody who is kind of losing control over her life. And she does it, it's all facial. There isn't much by way of dialogue or anything, but, you know, it's quite remarkable. I really was amazed by, I had no doubt how she was feeling at any time just from, you know, from seeing her on screen.
That's the one thing that worked in this movie, is her portrayal of being an alcoholic. I kept thinking, I wonder if she actually went through the stages of being so drunk and videotaping herself and watching it back, because her portrayal of being, you know, inebriated, along with really good makeup.
I always wonder if an actor
was very good. Was very, very good.
Go and get drunk in order to play a drunk. Because it is so hard to do. I mean, you know, it's very obvious when somebody is intoxicated. But trying to portray that is hard.
Okay, let's wind this one up. So, Yazdi, why don't you start us off with your summary and score, please?
If you don't know anything about this movie, go see it. It's a good little thriller. If you have read the book, then the movie will be a disappointment, as they tend to be. If you do see it for Emily Blunt's tremendous work. She is, you know, exceptionally good here. 7 out of 10 for me. I like the fact that, you know, it has Allison Janney in it, and it has Rebecca Ferguson, who we saw as, you know, Tom Cruise's love interest in the last Mission Impossible movie. She's here. Laura Prepon is here. So it's kind of good casting. It's good to see all these faces on screen, but it could have been this year's Gone Girl, but it's not.
Joe.
You know, I had a hard time with this movie being moved from its London locale, which was very well drawn in the book, and here it doesn't quite work, because I feel like commuting in London is a very uniquely London experience that doesn't translate to the movie in the way that I think it should have. But, you know, that's another, you know, mild disappointment, which is my overall sentiment here. I think It's a reasonable thriller. I think it's probably a point or two better if you haven't read the book. And so, you know, I think this is one that I wouldn't rush out to the movie theaters for. I would see it in a home environment. You certainly don't need to wait for it to be on the back of an airplane, but certainly, you know, Netflix or, you know, live streaming or DVD rental, Redbox is where it sits. So for me, I'm going to give it a very extraordinarily generous 7 out of 10.
I guess I'm a bit harsher then, because I wish I'd stayed on the platform and missed this train. I would say don't waste your money. Buy the book. It's money better spent. For me, this is very average as a result. I agree with Yazdi. I think Emily Blunt's performance is amazing. 5 out of 10 for me. Very average.
Okay. Movie number 2 then. Shall we review The Accountant?
Sure. So I have the intro to this one too. So as a math savant uncooks the books for a new client, the Treasury Department closes in on his activities and the body count starts to rise. That's really all I want to say about this one. This is directed by Gavin O'Connor and it's written by Bill DeBook. And it stars Ben Affleck, Anna Kendrick, J.K. Simmons, John Lithgow, Jeffrey Tambor, and a few others. So Joe, why don't you start us off on this one?
Okay, I mean, you know, this movie has its problems. You know, not least of which is this kind of premise, which I think it was a really good idea at the time it was conceived, but the execution of it was kind of weak. And, you know, the idea that we have this character who is, you know, we talk about autism so much, but he's clearly kind of got some personality traits that make him difficult, but he has also some almost, you know, superhero-like skills with math and numbers. So, again, just like the last movie, this is kind of a reasonable in the moment type of movie. It's just not particularly memorable or well executed. It feels a little clunky as it goes through its gears. Its plot is incredibly linear and kind of cliche ridden. And although Affleck, I think, does everything he can to breathe life into this character and make it believable, I just kind of struggled with the overall plausibility of it all. And you should never be thinking that. I mean, you know, the Bourne Identity, if you think about a superhero character, of course it's not plausible, but you never for a moment believe in what he is and what he's doing. And that's what I struggled with here. So, you know, above mediocre, but I struggled with this one.
Yes,
I loved it.
Did you really?
I loved
really?
It. Really? Yeah, I really loved it. In fact, I went back and saw it again.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Yeah.
It's so atypical and it's so deeply, deeply flawed. It goes so wrong at so many levels. But it's nobody can say that this movie is like any other thriller that has come out this year or in past years. I think it kind of has a very slow boil. It kind of is very interested in numbers and it's interested in autism. And it's kind of into very dangerous territory there when, you know, you're kind of saying, well, the fact that he's, you know, autistic gives him this extra skills, which combined with assassin-like physical skills would make him the perfect killing machine. But I do like that it just completely takes off at certain places. It kind of chugging along and then it gets very inspired. And it's frankly like batshit crazy in a few places. And I would rather that somebody make a flawed original movie than make a polished more of the same. And so this is a very flawed original film. I really liked it.
Wow. I mean, I'm probably more in the Joe camp. So for me, another fairly entertaining movie in the moment that should have been so much better if the story had just been a little bit more fleshed out. I mean, I really enjoyed watching Ben Affleck play this autistic character. And my, he's a great actor. And Anna Kendrick just lights up the screen for me. But it turned more into a pursuit action Bourne-esque rising body count drama than a thriller, which I think would have served it much better. Like, how interesting. This. I totally agree with you, Yazdi. What an amazing premise that you have an autistic accountant who basically cooks books bad people
right. by night,
right? And along has this amazing physical ninja like ability. That's a great night. Premise. Yeah, by night.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's
and works in a strip mall by day.
Right.
But
mild-mannered accountant Ben Affleck worked in the strip mall by day and by night. You know, that was basically where I struggled with it.
That would have been a great movie.
I love the idea of it, but I think execution-wise, it just came across as a little forced and clunky. And I wanted it to feel so much more natural. And I think, in part, I think it's the awkward nature of the lead character that makes me struggle to believe that he has got this like level of, you know, we're not used to seeing heroes in this way. That heroes are always like so charismatic and they're smart, you know, suave and smooth, or they're maybe a little rough around the edges, but they're always, you know, brutally honest and gritty. Here he's like, you know, awkward schoolboy, but yet he's able to dispatch, and he's almost a little. Yeah, he thinks like five steps ahead of everyone else. That's clear, to the point that he's not really ever seemingly in any danger in the movie as well. That's the other point that I think you know, you just know that he's going to handle anything, right? They could have come at him with an army, and he will take them out without breaking a sweat,
or challenge them to some good math question.
But again, I mean, just like the girl on the train. We know that the conceit is preposterous. I mean, you know, I mean, this is all the steady road of very traditional entertainment, right? I mean, I don't think you'll ever meet somebody like the accountant, you know, in real life, or maybe, I don't know. But I just liked, the other thing I liked is there's like three or four stories going on in the movie. There is, you know, the story with Ben Affleck. There's a story about the FBI agent who is kind of on his heels. And then there is that
the agent.
And then there's the John Lithgow story. And I like how it's kind of weaved in. And what I like more than anything else is the movie really takes its time. It really takes its time because it's very, very considered and slow paced until it gets to a particular point. And then I also like that, you know, there are two rather major reveals in the last 5 to 10 minutes of the movie, which are so ridiculous. They're so ridiculous. They are beyond preposterous. But, you know, it's somebody's script and they thought it up and it's silly and it's cheesy, but it worked for me. I was like, oh, God, I can't believe that's where they're going or that's what this is. But, okay, fine, I'm entertained.
See, I agree with you, Yazdi. For me, I think this has a lot going for it that just gets squandered away. The first half is really good, like the fact that it takes its time mm-hmm. for us to learn about this child who's autistic, who has trouble, but when channeled the right way, he becomes a, you know, highly productive member of society in some ways. And, you know, he's obsessed with ritual, and I love that it takes its time getting to that point because it does make the Ben Affleck adult character then a little bit more believable because you kind of understand how channeled and disciplined all his childhood has been to get him to that point. So I bought into that. But then it changes tone and it becomes all about a hunt for him. And I wanted to see the story, which is what he does, which was really interesting, and who he does it for. And we didn't get that. That's the film I wanted to see. If this had been the accountant and who he works for and how he does it, that would have been such a cool movie. Like all those photographs.
How he launders the money.
Yeah, how the money gets laundered, how he covers it all up. Because the way
origin
they
story
show,
would have been great here. Yeah, because how did he get into that?
Correct.
With the social skills that he has, like how did he get hired to, you know, how would somebody trust a character like this who is so straight laced by day that, you know, you would, you know, I don't know.
Right. So that's, I think, where it falls down for me is I wish this had been the movie about how he does what he does, because they spend a lot of time showing how he revealed what was going on. And that was fun. That was interesting. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it just went all downhill.
I mean, you mentioned this earlier, but I really want to give a shout out to Anna Kendrick because she has a really bad deal in this movie. I mean, she has to essentially react to Affleck's character to help flesh out his character some more. I mean, she's just the sounding board against which his character may start to change a little bit. And a lot of it depends on just her reactions. The dialogue is awful, but her reactions are so perfect. And I, you know, the second time I saw it, I even, you know, at a technical level, her reactions are so beautiful. And I like how their story is handled as well in terms of how it plays out.
Yeah.
But God, this is why you hire Anna Kendrick, and this is why more people need to hire her. She, you know, she's perfectly happy doing the singing movies, Pitch Perfect and all that, but she can do other stuff.
Yes, she really can. She's a chameleon.
Yeah. She's a triple threat.
She really is.
She can sing, she can dance, and she's a great actor. So more Anna Kendrick, please.
Yeah. Anything else on this one, or should we wrap this up?
Let's wrap it up.
Okay, Yazdi, you go first.
I love this movie. I really do. I mean, every time I think about it, it puts a smile on my face. And everybody knows how much I hate sequels. And even then, I'm ready for a sequel to The Accountant. You know, it could be an origin story. It could be just, you know, what happens next in this person's life. It's almost like setting up a Bourne kind of, you know, series. So not perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination. It's full of errors, but I like how giddy the movie is, how it takes off at certain places, and how it takes chances, even realizing that a lot of those chances will make people laugh at the screen. So I like that it's ambitious in that way. So my score is 8 out of 10. A very generous 8 out of 10. Yeah.
Joe.
You know, maybe I overthought this one a little, because I don't think it does stand up to scrutiny the way that it's created. And I think, like you guys, the premise here is excellent. I really, really wanted to see and know more about the universe that this character inhabits and how he came to be. So, yeah, wasn't the movie that they made, fair enough. And that's not necessarily the movie that I wanted to see, but it's reasonable entertainment. I'll give you that, Yazdi. And for that, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. You know, just kind of check your brain at the door. You know, just let it be. Let it be what it is and be entertained by its moves. And the one thing that we didn't talk about is just how well choreographed the action sequences are.
Yes.
They're good. They had me jumping in my seat and you know, they really are just technically very beautifully constructed. You always know what's going on and you always know where the tension is.
Did you give a score?
Yeah, seven.
Oh, I was in my own world for a microsecond there. Okay, I wanted more math and conspiracy theory than men in black suits and henchmen being killed. So my score is square root of 8 divided by 3 times 7. 6 out of 10.
So no, overall, not too bad, right? It's an 8, a 7, and a 6.
Yeah.
All right. Final movie of the week, then, is Masterminds.
So Masterminds comes to us from Jared Harris, who previously directed Napoleon Dynamite and Nacho Libre with Jack Black. And the movie is based on the famous 1997 Loomis Fargo robbery. And it tells the story of a very simple, quiet, bored man who's a driver of an armored vehicle. And he gets talked into a crime by a colleague at work who happens to perhaps be his crush. And I haven't seen this movie, but I don't want to give anything more away. I did not realize it's based on a true story. So if you happen to know the true story, then you will know how it all plays out. It has a very good cast. It has Kristen Wiig, Zach Galifianakis in the role of the driver of the armored car. Jason Sudeikis is in it. Owen Wilson is in it. And then Leslie Jones and Kate McKinnon and Ken Marino, who are all from SNL, they're here as well.
Ghostbusters.
And Ghostbusters. The story is by Emily Spivey, Chris Bauman, and Hubble Palmer. So, Masterminds, what do you guys think about it?
Okay, so this should have been a brilliant movie given this cast and the fact that this is based on a true story. But it ended up being an entertaining movie. Funnier because of the gimmick that it's set in the 80s and the love obsession of Zach Galifianakis and Kristen Wiig. I really enjoyed this movie in the moment.
Yeah, this is coming up with a 33% score on Rotten Tomatoes, which suggests that it's absolutely abysmal, and it absolutely isn't. You know, it has a kind of a sweetness to it. I think Galifianakis and Kristen Wiig were very believable in the way that they interacted and the way that they might... the way that this might have come about, because I think it's very clear that this man was seduced by the prospect of somebody who was, you know, several steps above his league, if we want to kind of categorize people in that way, into doing this thing. But I think, you know, the movie's great problem, or I think it's coming in for a lot of of Stick is that they tried to make an out-and-out comedy with this, and I think the material deserves a little bit more of a nuanced treatment. I mean, it is funny that this somewhat, you know, inept, very simple guy manages to pull off the largest cash heist in, I think, American history, at the least at the time.
Really?
It was an enormous all-cash heist, and they still haven't recovered all the money. I did go away and read some of this. So, you know, it's... And the way that he kind of gets away and the way that he is able to evade, you know, the law, and really, you know, if it wasn't for... you know, being turned in, he could have actually got away with this. It's kind of fascinating how this all kind of came together. And that's ultimately where I think people end up a little disappointed with it, because it does, I think, require, you know, something more of a serious handling. And it could still be very funny, but to make it into a kind of a slapstick sketch like comedy. I mean, if you look at the character of Steve, played by Owen Wilson, He's really just a joke. I mean, I don't believe that character could have operated in the way that he did.
Okay, so I had the opposite reaction to you, Joe. I think people are disappointed because of the cast, thinking it's going to be a slapstick comedy. And actually, I thought that it was more of a black comedy or a darker comedy. It was more of a dramedy played by some really funny people. Mm. Who played it really well. So I think there may be a misalignment of the cast that they've chosen, who are amazingly funny people when they're in those comedy movies, but each of them can actually play drama as well, I think. And I was actually impressed by the Zach Galifianakis. He was almost held back, I think. And again, I think the gimmick of the fact that it was the 80s almost inferred that it was going to be a funny slapstick movie, but it didn't really end up that way for me. And so I think that what it captured as a result for me is that, and I think it did this really well, is that the lengths that people go to for other people. And so it was convincing around the motivation of the characters. It was believable that Zach Galifianakis would do what he did for the person that he fell in love with, in a sense.
But his wife was just such a plot device. I mean, she was like...
I mean, she was brilliant.
She was very funny.
That was one of her most hilarious scenes in the movie.
But it was hard to believe in that relationship.
And yeah.
I think, you know, that's what I'm saying. This movie needed to have something that, you know, the wife was just, you know, categorically, you know, she was awful. And I think it would have been more effective had she been...
Kate McKinnon
was Zach Galifianakis' wife. It's one of the most hilarious scenes in any movie that they have these two characters taking wedding pictures. Those, you know, like choreographed wedding pictures. I swear to God, I nearly wept myself in the theater. I almost thought I had. That was one of the most funny scenes I've seen in any movie.
Yeah, but the movie
this year.
Yeah, but it was
tonally inconsistent. Well, then
it loses some power because I think, you know, because she's so miserable. You know, the seduction by Kristen Wiig is could have worked very well. I mean, the chemistry between them in those early scenes is wonderful.
It's brilliant,
and
yeah.
You know, they're natural, and you could see how that relationship might develop. But you know, the fact that the wife is so one dimensionally awful.
Really?
Yeah, she's just, you know...
Is she mean?
Okay. Beyond mean.
Yeah.
It's like, why would anyone actually be in that circumstance?
But again, we're seeing a character doesn't have much confidence in himself, and so he's seduced by this...
I get it, but it's
Kristen Wiig character.
Too far. And that's the thing. I think one step too far for me is really the theme of the movie. I mean, think about the swimming pool scene, you know, with when his stomach isn't so good. I'll just leave it there. Mm. You know, there are... Those kind of moments, which are going for straight for the slapstick.
Yeah, I think, see what you're saying.
True or not, I mean, you know, this story is so bizarre that anything, you know, could be true about it. So, you know, maybe that is based on something. But come on, I mean, it was just a clown moment in a movie that I think could otherwise have been what you said at the beginning, which is, you know, a more serious take of what happened here. And it was an interesting story. I want to see the documentary on this.
I want to see
how they pulled off the heist. Yeah. You know, I want to see the real footage because all of that stuff exists.
Yeah. So have we convinced you to see it yet?
Yeah. Just for that cast. I try not to miss a Kristen Wiig movie.
Yeah, exactly. So let's sum this up then. I mean, for me, very enjoyable and entertaining in the moment. However, I think it will dissolve from your mind over time. I think there was a problem of tonality and casting here. But I enjoyed it in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the movie has some very good moments. I think, you know, let's not say that this movie is not entertaining, because it certainly was. I think the absolute beating it's had in the press is completely undeserved. I think it has, you know, a sweetness to it. But again, I think the subject matter, the underlying subject matter, is so much more interesting than the way it was handled here that, you know, therein lies my disappointment with it all. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. I think it's...
Oh, I didn't give
it
a score.
Did you not?
No, 7.
7, okay. I know, we're always forgetting scores these days. So, yeah, 5 out of 10. And, you know, see it on Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a waste of your time. I mean, you know, 33... I know people who won't go to see anything that's under 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I think they're missing out on life. Because there's just like a ton of stuff.
I agree.
There's so many beating. Movies.
Yeah. There's so many. I think it's my favorite movie of this week. Okay. Right, of the three podcasts,
really?
I think this is the favorite. Yeah,
I was worried where you're going. Of this,
Better than The Accountant.
Yeah, yeah. As a whole movie,
yeah. Okay.
As a whole movie and an entertaining experience, Masterminds, The Accountant, and then Girl on the Train for me.
For some reason, every time I hear Masterminds, I think it's an animated movie.
Anyway. That's because of Megamind. Oh, I think Megamind, that blue-headed alien.
That's right.
Movie from a couple of years ago. Yeah. All right.
So good. I'll look forward to watching this one for sure.
All right. Let's wrap up the podcast. It's 36 minutes in, so it's been a good length today. We will be back soon enough with reviews of Certain Women, Jack Reacher, Hacksaw Ridge. We've got a lot of movies that are coming up this time of year.
Busy period is starting.
It really is. It's, you know, there's no excuse if you're sitting at home and thinking, what shall I go see in the movies? There's a ton of stuff. So go out there and check them out. So until our next podcast, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.